Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chilly.
It is the third day of November 2021, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this indeed is the show you were looking for. How do I know that? Because you found it. Anyway, I'm still a little bit under the weather on a Woden's Day, Wednesday. That's the middle of the week, again, according to that thing we call a calendar. But look, welcome to it, no matter who you are, where you are, when you are, because we are also a podcast afterwards. Anyways, we're going through the Wednesday night experiment, and I got to say, allowing Nature Boy to book Wednesdays is becoming more and more interesting. I'm not even going to talk about the second hour guest because I'm going to talk about the first hour guest and get right to him. I don't want to waste too much time. We went to air a little bit late. But let's see. How could I start this out in a way that I guarantee no other interview has started out for this guy? He's been a contestant on The Voice. He's a musician. Now, normally, I don't really like that TV show. But fact is, I had to have Katie Caden on this show. Had to. Because there was some real talent. Well, guess what? Another guy I missed who got a voice audition is... Here's funny, and I know you guys are going to laugh if you know this show real well, but his name is Blind Joe. So the Blind JFK researcher, me, is going to talk to Blind Joe. And we were both musicians at one point. And look, I'm going to ask him how blind he is and everything else. But first, and we're going to get into his music. I'm going to give you links for everything. He's got demos up on YouTube. He's got music out there. He's going to tell you all about that, but we're just going to kind of get to know him, and I'm happy that my Wednesday producer has brought me this gentleman. It's always good to hear something fresh, and what did I talk about with music last night when I didn't mean to? I said, if it's got a soul, then it's fine. You know, that's the thing. And I got to tell you, just limited exposure to your stuff, Blind Joe... Man, it's very cool. First off, before I get into the details, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Chuck. Hey, thank you for having me on the podcast, brother. I really appreciate it. You got a hell of a radio voice there, my friend. I assume you've done this type of thing for a while.
Well, a little while. I'll tell you, I mean, I've done thousands of shows at this point. But the thing is that I do it all independently. And I'm producing the show, and look, I did bring up the limited sight issue. Let's just get that right out of the way. You're called Blind Joe. Why is that?
I am. Well, I'm totally blind, and what happened in my case was I was born, I was born 3 months premature, and so I have what's called retinopathy of prematurity, basically a fancy way of saying my retinas didn't attach.
Right.
But I'm kind of a miracle baby in that regard because the doctors told my parents that there was a 98% chance I wouldn't make it, and if I did make it, I was going to be severely multi-handicapped. And here we are, man.
Well, see, now, here we go. You're not going to believe this, right? But I am not totally blind. I'm legally blind and very limited visually. But funny thing is that me starting out life, I wasn't supposed to make it maybe because I was born drug addicted. Now, the visual issue is something else. And I did not get to total blindness, although the experts kept saying that's where I was going.
Right.
So I have this, like, very, very severe, albinism, actually. And it's in a rare form, and it's combined with a couple other conditions, which, you know, there's a severe amblyopia. I'm sure you've heard all these terms.
Yeah, I have.
You know, and the thing is, I have this very rare condition. And been, you know, at that subsistence level with sight my whole life, but they kept telling me that he's going to go blind by the time he's seven. He's going to go blind by the time he's a teenager. He's going to go blind by the time he's in his 20s. And sometime in my 20s, they stopped saying it because it was like, we don't know.
Well, I think too, that a lot of what medical professionals discount or really don't think about is the power of human spirit and human will and what that kind of, you know, how that kind of plays into things, you know.
Right.
Granted, that doesn't have a, you know, it may not have had a lot to do with your particular condition, but I've definitely seen firsthand where, you know, diagnoses have been made and they've been outshined tenfold, especially with blindness. So.
Yeah, and I'm not going to stay on the blindness too long. I don't like to hover on somebody's handicap, but I feel good about this conversation because you and I might be able to share a few things.
We can talk about whatever, dude, for sure.
Well, I want to talk about it, and we're going to ease into the music a little bit because, you know, curious, I don't know, you know, what part of the country you grew up in. Your accent is not super pronounced. You could probably guess I'm from somewhere in the Northeast, even though I live in Georgia now. You know, based on the sound of my voice, right?
Right, yeah.
It, you know, and I, too, was a musician for a little while. Now, I didn't have the kind of talent that you did, but basically just with attitude and effort, I made a living for a few years, you know.
Yeah, that's great, man. That's what it's all about, you know.
About 10, but I got to tell you, you know, as a kid, trying to pick up instruments and stuff, was a little bit different for me because of the visual issue. You know, I couldn't sit and just watch a guitar teacher. And I'm bringing this up for a very particular reason. Now, today I'm a terrible guitarist, always have been. but I could play bass a little bit. I can play some drums, and I was a vocalist. Now, the sound of my voice might not appear that way at the moment, but it definitely has not been practiced in a long time. But that's what I got into. And quite frankly, the encouragement came from, believe it or not, going to a blind camp when I was a kid where, frankly, I was not the worst off of among them, but also not the best among them either, visually speaking. And honestly, to be around my peers helped me out a lot, but we took unconventional approaches to making music in a group. And I'm curious if you had any of those sorts of experiences when you were growing up that might have helped you to, you know, to embrace instruments. And then I want to talk about some of the instruments we can see you play online and things like that.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Well, for me, you know, I started at a very, very young age playing instruments. I mean, I think I was probably 3 years old when my grandpa bought me a Sears and Roebuck guitar, you know, just a cheap $20 piece of crap you could bang on, and he tuned it up to an open E chord for me. So at first it was an open E, and then we tuned it to, I think it was an open G, so dobro tuning. And he took mailbox letters and took a metal plate and screwed it onto the guitar, and then showed me the mailbox letters and you know, told me this is A, this is B, and he put like a big one for the major and a small one for the sharp or flat, and I think he was doing sharps.
Nice.
But that's how, so then when I would slide the bar, I would kind of feel with my thumb and memorized what the notes were. So that's kind of how it started for me, because my grandpa was really into like Hank and Haggard, all the old school country, and he was in a bunch of bands around North Dakota and Minnesota. And so once I kind of was singing along to Hank and playing guitar, then he and I started jamming down in this little music room that my parents let us use way deep in the basement so they couldn't hear us banging around. But we did that for years and years and years. And I mean, we would just sit down there and, you know, he'd have his brandy and I'd have my Mountain Dew, and we'd sing Hank and Jim Croce and Merle Haggard and old school shottishes and polkas and all that kind of stuff, man. He was really into the old timey stuff. So.
Right. So help out listeners a little bit here, because not everybody is necessarily going to know what a dobro is.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. A dobro is a type of guitar that's primarily used in country music, but it's also used in a lot of different music. But it's played with a slide, and there are no frets on a dobro because it's played with a slide. And it looks, I don't know how to explain looks very well, being blind, but it doesn't, it's got a different look to it than a standard guitar. I think it's less rounded. Am I right on that, Chuck?
Well, it's interesting because I've seen this done a lot of different ways. And, you know, like there are blues players who build their own where they cut it and they put a hubcap inside of it, believe it or not, to give it that really tinny sound. And it's played with a slide, and it's funny because you know, it's played like sitting down on the lap, which...
Yeah, flat top, yes.
Flat top, which, you know, the first time I ever actually saw somebody do that was a guy named Jeff Healy, who was...
I get that. I get compared to him probably 7,000 times a day on TikTok.
There you go. So, blind guitarist, in case you don't know who Jeff Healy is, listeners, you know, a guy who is also blind, and I'm pretty sure completely blind like you.
Yes, he was.
And was most famously, I would say, you could easily find clips of him in the movie Roadhouse.
Definitely.
Okay, and very talented.
Underrated musician, for sure. Fantastic player, fantastic singer-songwriter. Guy was a beast.
Right. Now, he actually played a guitar like a dobro.
He did.
And, you know, in other words, it was sitting, you know, face up. In other words, you know, normally you see a guitar and you can see the strings facing you, but these are facing upward, which really made more sense to me when I first picked up a guitar that you would play it that way anyway. Not having actually seen people do it when I was a little kid.
Right, and that's the reason I do it too, is because it's what made sense. And then as I was playing the dobro with my grandpa, you know, as I got a little older, I started getting into more rock and roll and, you know, Guns N' Roses and Pantera and that kind of stuff. And
right.
So then I thought, well, I need to learn how to play this guitar if I'm going to do what I think every musician, guitar playing teenager wants to do, which is play a guitar and get chicks. I need to like do it the right way and do it well. And so then I learned how to play with my fingers.
Right.
And
right.
I just taught myself.
Oh, no. You know, and the other instrument that you might have encountered somewhere, believe it or not, I don't know. I haven't seen one of these in a lot of years. They used to call it like an electro harp, which.
A harpsichord kind of thing. Yeah. Or are you talking about the ones with the strings and the buttons on them? The strings aren't real strings, though. It's like a kind of like an electronic thing that you strum with your finger.
No, with the real strings, but it's also got the keys that you press with your other hand. And I was introduced to that thing. I couldn't master that. There was no way.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. I think I was introduced to one of those at the School for the Blind as a kid, and. Yeah, I completely agree with you. I was not very good at making that thing sound good.
Well, it wasn't a very soulful instrument. You see, dobro or a guitar, you can bend things. And,
yes.
You know, and that intonation, that's all what it's all about. I mean, that's where you get, you know, anybody could learn to play notes and play them in the right order. But to actually, you know, play them and have a style about you.
Right.
That is,
yeah, you got to put your heart into it.
Yeah, and I mean, so, you know, just like everything else in life, there's always a little bit of give, and it might not be a lot sometimes, but that's all that it takes. Anyways, the great thing about this, though, is that, like, literally I looked at you and I said, okay, this is a guy who I guarantee that's the first way he started learning this. And I was just going through it and saying to myself, man, that's a different way to go about it to start with. You also have a good voice, which, you know, and that's the other thing. He was on the show, The Voice, duh. But, I mean, I'm saying, but most times, I got to be honest with you, outside, did you ever see Katie Caden on that show or hear her, I should say?
No. And feel free to use the word see, man. I'm not one of these people that's easily offended or whatever. I'm wearing a shirt that says awake but not woke right now. So you're good.
Oh, good. All right. So you're one of these guys. I talked to you a couple times. We can make blind jokes at each other. It's cool.
Oh, hell yes.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah.
My social media feeds are full of blind jokes, and people get so pissed off at me for it. It's like, I'm joking about myself, guys. Settle down.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, right?
If we can't pick on ourselves, you know, what's the point?
Yeah. And, dude, especially in these times, you know? I mean, we're all going through a lot right now. If we can't joke about something, I mean, holy cow.
Really? I mean, you know, I love making people uncomfortable with it, actually. It's like, did you see that? Who are you asking? You know, you know, and people go, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, don't be sorry. It's fine.
Oh, I know.
You know,
sometimes I'll get right up on them, man. They're like, oh, dude, have you seen this new movie? What? Are you really asking me if I've seen something, man? Don't you know that hurts? I mean, you couldn't have said here. You know, and they're like, oh, dude, I'm so sorry. I'm like, nah, just messing with you, Matt.
You know, and just one really quick curiosity is when sometimes people tell me they're completely blind, they actually do have moments where they can see some light or anything like that. Are you in the experience of, you know, occasionally I get a sensation, or are you in the position of, listen, I might as well not have eyes? I mean, which...
So it's kind of weird with me, because when I was a kid, I had a lot of light perception in my left eye. Mm-hmm. And now, as I get older, it tricks me. You know what I mean? Like, I think that I'm seeing this light mm-hmm. that I'm not actually seeing. And I know that sounds weird coming from a blind guy, but I mean, I had a lot of light perception. Now, there were no shapes or shadows or colors, or I didn't see any objects or anything like that. But I could definitely tell if there was light coming from a certain place, like a window or a lamp, anything like that. And now, I'm lucky that I can actually see the sun now. Like when I go outside and the sun's out, I can look up at it and still see that. But flashlights and all that stuff, I can't see those anymore.
Yeah, well, and that's the other thing I try and explain to people is that it's not a universal experience, you know?
No, it's really not. And that's the thing is, like, you know, it's so much easier for blind people and visually impaired people to just say, I'm blind. Because there is such a it's so diverse as far as, you know, what you can see and what you can't see. I mean, there's just so many different visual acuities that it's tough to tell people. So people just say, you know, hey, I'm blind.
Yeah, shorthand. And that's it. You know,
right. Yeah.
And you know, and I usually add the addendum, look, I can see, but I don't see much. How about that?
Yeah,
you know?
There you go. Perfect.
It's like, you know, and funny things happen to you when you act a certain way, too, because people forget and, you know, do things to you, like wave at you from across the street or something. And then get mad at you. I'm telling you, it's a whole subculture, believe it or not.
It's a thing. It's definitely a subculture, man. It's definitely a thing. It's funny you talk about people forgetting, because I hear that from my friends all the time. You know, they'll come over to the apartment and I'm just like walking around doing my thing, you know, getting stuff done and whatever. And they're like, wow, you know, sometimes I forget you're blind. And I'm like, why? Because I'm doing normal stuff like a normal person. I mean, you should. I mean, that's nice. I appreciate it, I guess. But like, why would you even think about it? We're just hanging out, you know?
Right. And, you know, that's another interesting thing, too, about the Dobro when you talked about the raised letters is a lot of people, you know, Louis Braille, for which Braille is named after. Actually, that's according to what I understood, is that's the way it was initially done, is you just had the raised lettering.
And I know they did a lot of they had a lot of different variations of that. At one point, there was a string that they tied in knots and formed into letters.
Right.
It's really interesting if you read the book on Louis Braille. It's really you know, at first when I was a kid, I was like, I don't care about Louis Braille, but as I've gotten older and read up on him, it's really an interesting character.
Well, it's kind of an interesting thing, and again, when you're dealing with music, right? I had a skill which people attributed to me not being able to see well, and I'm not sure that that's true. I think I just had overly sensitive ears, you know, where I could hear electronic noise that other people didn't necessarily hear, but then you play back a recording and you can hear it. And I'd say, look, you know, I can hear buzzing and wires and stuff, you know. I can hear when the shielding's going bad on things. And that actually got me paid for a little while working in studios and stuff. As
there
I said,
you go. Nice.
You know, working in the music business, I did everything from being a bouncer to being a performer. And that's another funny thing. How does a blind guy be a bouncer? Trust me, I can figure it out. And usually I'm the guy who has to talk.
I love it. You know, I just got to tell you, man, it's just so great to talk to someone like you with your charisma and your attitude, because unfortunately, it seems to me at least, and I could be sorely mistaken. I usually am, but it seems to me at least in the blind community, we have a lot of people that are entitled and that think that they're owed things because they're blind. And, I mean, we could go into that. I think it has a lot to do with things that they're given, but it's you know, it's just so refreshing to hear somebody that's willing to take the bull by the horns, man, and fight the good fight.
That's why I loved it when I okay, so I can see your videos a bit, right? And you don't come off as one of these guys who's got any different in attitude. I mean, if you do look at your eyes directly, you can see this, but it's not like, you know, but that's the thing is I see the attitude of a guy who's like, you know what? It's not that I'm not a blind musician, even though you got Blind Joe up front. I mean, and look, there's other people been called blind this and blind that weren't blind.
Right.
You know, it's just it's kind of an interesting little hook. You know, and you could be anybody, Joe. I mean, please. So why not?
Right.
And why not just push it up front? You know.
Yeah, and you know that really kind of that was never really like a. I never really thought, you know, hey, you know, blindness, I could use that as a gimmick. It was always just what people called me, you know. We had, like, right. three different Joes in school, and the teacher asked one day, well, how are we going to tell you guys apart? And I said, just call me Blind Joe. And, you know, that's what they've called me since I was, I mean, I don't know, pretty damn young, 14, 13, 14, whatever it was. But yeah, I mean, it just makes sense, you know. It's who I am, and now, I mean, even before this music and everything, I was Blind Joe, and people call me BJ or whatever, and that's... You know, it is who I am. You know, I've had people get offended, you know, for me, which I think is absolutely ludicrous. I remember I was on The Voice in LA and I was getting, you have to do hair and makeup and everything, you know, of course, when you're on TV and getting my hair done, this guy that I had just met, his name was Bradley, and he said, hi, I'm Bradley. I said, hey, Bradley Blind Joe. Nice to meet you, man. And he goes, I'm not going to call you that. I go, okay, I guess you could call me Visually Impaired Joseph, but it really doesn't have the same ring to it, you know?
No,
just joking
doesn't.
With him, tried to laugh, but he did not find that funny at all. And he didn't talk to me for the rest of our little hair appointment there, but...
Oh, boy.
You know,
what are you going to do? And after all, look, it's about the music, and cool thing, you're telling me about, you know, working with Haggard and, you know, stuff like that, playing things that are familiar... in the basement, and that's cool. And obviously you got handed an instrument, but after that, I'm sure you fiddled around with other things.
I still do, man. You know, I call myself, I get this from my grandpa, jack of all trades, master of none. Because I've never been super proficient at any instrument except my vocals. I take great pride in my vocal
right.
ability and I work on it really, really hard. But other than that, you know, guitar, I love playing guitar and it's a great accompaniment for my vocal, but I play drums and bass and pick around on banjo a little bit and do some 12 string and played trumpet for 7 years and played piano for 7 years. And so, I mean, you know, I get around, but my real passion is singing and nice. Producing. I love making a record sound like a real record. And I'm working with a guy here in Nashville now named Brent McAuliffe, who's, plays keyboards for Trace Adkins, but he's also been a producer out here for like 15, 20 years, and he's been kind enough to show me the ropes and, you know, let me in on the magic, and boy, what an experience it's been.
Okay, so maybe I haven't dug through your music enough, but I'm wondering how come there's not a little mouth harp in there, because I didn't hear any harmonica anywhere.
No, and you know, I'm going to add that to the tunes right now. Being independent, I just... I really have to just get the musicians that I can get, and I don't really have a lot of wiggle room to just be like, you know what, we need to throw a mouth harp on this, or we need to throw some banjo in here, or whatever. You know, I've got a great group of dudes that I work with that are kind enough to give me a decent price, at least for out here. You know, I'm getting like $1,500 a song, which is you know, damn good for Nashville.
That is pretty cheap for Nashville at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. And so, you know, now I will not comply. My latest single is really doing well, and I expect it to keep doing well because it's really, I think, a song that we all need right now. And if that happens, you know, and it gets to the point where I can just kind of throw money at a song, as much money as I want, you know, to make it what I really, really want it to be, then I'll definitely be adding some mandolin and some banjo, and I'll probably cut a whole bluegrass record, man, to be honest with you, because okay. I love, love, love bluegrass.
Well, I see a lot of possibilities, because that song, yeah, I can see how it's, you know, it's fine the way it is. First of all, you know, the version you have that's out there in public right now that I heard, there is nothing wrong with it at all. But tell people about the lyrical content there, because I appreciate it. And
Thank you, man. There's some that don't, for sure.
Yeah,
you know,
so,
and I
yeah.
think that it comes from, well, I mean, it comes from this fear porn that the media has instilled in people, but I think it also comes from this headline culture that we have where people see something and they don't read into it, and then they just run their mouth about something they know nothing about. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what's happening with my tune. You know, the lyrics, of course, the chorus is, you know, I will not comply. Quit trying to take me to task because I don't want to wear a mask or take a vaccine that could maybe make me die. They've got no scientific evidence to back that crap up. All they do is feed us lie after lie, and that's why I will not comply.
Right.
And, you know, it's easy to hear that, I think, and emotionally react and go, this guy's an anti-vaccine, anti-masked piece of crap! You know, but in reality, what the song is saying is, you know, with especially with a line like, quit trying to take me to task, that if you've never heard that line before, that's kind of a Southern thing. And what that mm-hmm. means is, you know, stop trying to tell me what to do. Stop trying to make something big out of something small and run me through the ringer for it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's essentially what the song is about. Don't tell me what to do, because I've been a free, red-blooded American for 39 years, not listening to anybody but myself and people that I care about. And you know what? I think I'll be just fine doing that for the next 39 years. I don't need you to tell me what to wear on my face. I don't need you to tell me what to put in my arm. Sure as hell don't need to tell you to tell me, you know, how to do my job or raise my family.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the passion behind the song. Not don't go out and get vaccinated or don't wear a mask. Listen, man, you want to put some that in your arm or you want to wear a face diaper for the rest of your life? Be my guest. I don't care. You know, but don't, this mandate stuff is really what gets me.
No, look, and that's exactly where my position's been, you know, from the beginning about all this where, look, individual freedom is individual freedom, and it's definitely not mm-hmm. safety. And the fact is that, you know, if you think that's going to make you safe, matter of fact, I got to tell you, I don't care about what you want to put in your body. Okay,
yeah.
Blind Joe, you want to go snort broken glass. Brother, that's up to you. I mean,
yeah, amen,
you know,
brother, amen.
This is not my problem. As long as you're not making other people do it, listen, you can do with your body as you please. Okay,
yep.
And you and your family can collectively make choices. And that's that. Okay, as far as I'm concerned, I don't care if it, and I always felt that way. I feel like drug prohibition is useless as well.
Yes,
does nothing
absolutely.
But provides, you know, a mill for the for-profit prison system.
Yes.
You know, and a good way to keep people in line. Cause,
absolutely, brother. You got it, man.
You know, but that's the thing. Compliance. And, I appreciate the lyrics of the song. I'm apparently not going to be yelling at you, how dare you, you know. Above
right.
Okay, this is not me. You know, even, and that's the funny thing, is even if I thought that, I would still draw this line. You know, my right to go swinging my fist ends at the tip of your nose anyway. So
right.
You and I can object and we can have discussions and we can do whatever, but at the end of the day, your decisions are yours and so is your destiny. So,
right.
You know, and that's honestly what I took from it. I mean, you have very simple lyrics here. And I'm
yep.
not saying that in an insulting way. Everything doesn't have to be complex.
No, not at all. I get it.
It's about the sentiment. You know, and that's the funny thing about music, is that sometimes simplicity is not a bad thing. I mean, I appreciate
right.
complex things that are, you know, orchestral movements. And, you know, I appreciate that kind of stuff. But I also appreciate, you know, simple rhythms, the kind of thing that's a groove. And
yeah, and, you know, Chuck, the songs I write are simple by design. You know, I work very hard at trying to write what I think sounds like a hit song. And hit songs are simple. They're to the point. They've got a hook. They got a great chorus.
Mm-hmm.
They keep you grooving, your toe tapping. And so, you know, I love a simple song. Three chords and the truth. That's right up my alley, man.
That's beautiful. Three chords and the truth. I don't think I've heard that elsewhere.
But, yeah, that's country music, brother, through and through.
And that's the thing is, I'm not a super huge fan of a lot of newer country music, but
yeah,
a lot
join
of that,
the club on that one, buddy.
A lot of that grittier, older stuff. You know, and that's the thing. If it's got some grit, it might have some soul to it. See,
yeah,
you know, here we go. I'm
and I love. Can I just say too,
yeah.
man, that I just love that you talk about soul with music, because I love all kinds of music, and, you know, you're absolutely right when you talk about soul and being real. You know, I was listening to a rapper here today that I've been listening to for a couple of weeks. His name is Vin J.
Okay.
And he is just full of heart and soul, man. I mean, he gets on the mic and just, you know, he is here, and whether you like it or not, you just cannot deny the talent. And we have people like that in all genres of music. You know what I mean? If I'm going for rock, I would say that like LaJon Witherspoon from Seven Dust, actually all the guys from Seven Dust, or maybe like Sahaj Ticketon from Raw, right. You know, and if you go to country, you're looking at people like Chris Stapleton, you know, of course, Travis Tritt back in the day, and all styles of music have that one band. You know, with metal, it was Pantera and Metallica. There's always that those one or two that just do it real. There's no record label bull crap, no, you know, paid for promotion. It's just an organic, wonderful thing that comes together because of God and music. And that's what I love, man.
Well, see, and that's the remarkable thing is that there, to my opinion, and again, maybe it's because I'm getting old, I'm just a little bit older than you, like about 10 years, you know, and like, I don't know, you know, and I've heard this before, being a musician, I heard it from older people, it's like, oh, the music doesn't have the same sound. It's not a matter of a lack of sound, but there is junk that is put out by the industry, okay? And there always is, no matter what industry. Look, there's a lot of McDonald's hamburgers out there, okay?
And that's what I was just going to say, too, is this is industry. You know, it's like you just said, it doesn't... It's occurred to me, especially over this past couple years here, that industry in general is kind of what destroys good things sometimes. Just sucks the soul right out of it, you know? And music is a great example of that.
Well, and you're coming in at a tough time, all right? Because honestly, a lot of what the industry used to offer as a way to survive, make money, okay? It's not all about the money, but look, let's be honest. You got to eat while you're creating your art.
Got to make a living, yes.
Okay, and the thing is, a lot of that is now gone. That was still there, you know, when you and I were, well, I'll put it to you this way. When I was in my 20s and you were in your teens, there was money there. And a lot of that money...
You could come to Nashville back then, and, you know, if you had a good enough song, you'd get signed.
Yeah.
Especially in the 90s. I mean, there was a huge, huge lot of people getting signed back then. But yeah, you're right. It's definitely changed. And, you know, a lot of people think it's changed for the negative. And I suppose if you work at a record label, it probably has.
Boom, right.
But, you know, lately, things have been great with the internet. I mean, and now you have platforms like TikTok, which I realize that, you know, if you feel like me about TikTok, you maybe kind of shy away from that sort of thing because it's pretty, I don't know. I don't really know what to say about TikTok. It's something else on TikTok.
But again, every time something becomes an industry, there's a whole lot of junk food out there. It doesn't mean that you can't utilize it. See, it's an interesting time. Because you have the ability, literally, in the palm of your hands now, to reach the entire world with something you create. That wasn't the case some years ago. You needed these factories. You needed to produce products and ship them and market them. And nowadays, I mean, I'm not saying that it's better, but the point is that literally, if you create something and you put it out there, it can be seen by the entire world.
Yep, so, absolutely. Look at I Will Not Comply. I mean, that song, man, I wrote that song last year, and I put it up on YouTube, and it stayed at like 1,000 views until literally 3 weeks ago, and then all of a sudden, somebody found it, and it started like 10,000 views a day, and it just happened to be like when I had just gotten off the road and was halfway through recording the studio version of the song.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know... You just never know. You just never know. I mean, the internet is such a wonderful tool, especially for musicians today, that you can skate by without a record label if you're willing to work. If you're not willing to work, forget it.
Well, but see, that's the thing. It's not like it was effortless to begin with, but now the rules have just changed. I mean, things evolve.
Yeah.
But I think it's an excellent time. And again, you're talking about being on the road. That's got to have been hard recently.
You know, man, actually, it really, it's been really great. I thought it was going to be pretty tough, but I booked a 13-week, 17,000-mile tour over the summer, and the wife and I hit the road, and, dude, I think it was probably the best tour we've ever had. Mm. It was fantastic. We were in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska. Did we hit Ohio on this tour? I don't think we did. But it was great, and you could kind of feel it in the air that people are starting to get a little upset with our current situation and stuff. And we had a great summer, but yeah, I mean, you know, with the lockdowns and the pandemic and stuff, it was definitely tough. I had to kind of pivot and do a lot of social media stuff, Facebook lives and all that. And, you know, I'm just thankful that I have such a supportive, albeit small, fan base that is very loyal and that really helped us through that.
Nah, look, it's a different sort of time, like I said, and I would have thought it would be tougher now. I know a lot of tours were canceled, you know, like last year and stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of people couldn't perform live, and then they got different rules on you and all this different stuff. But, you know, I feel like you could have written the you know, I Will Not Comply without the new normal that is happening at the moment. And I feel like you might have written it about something else, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
No, you're absolutely right, and I would have written it about food for sure, because I think that it's absolutely disgusting what they do to us and with our food system, our food supply, and how they've gotten away from even teaching kids about food in schools. You know, nobody's cooking in school anymore. Nobody knows how to cook. Everybody's going to McDonald's. They got kids strung out on cheeseburgers and Xanax. I mean, and that's all because they don't know how to cook. They've never been taught. And, you know, it's a whole big game that they play between the food and the pharmaceuticals. You know, it's all linked, and, they don't want you to get better, because if you get healthy, they don't have any more customers. So, and I think that's absolute BS.
Well, plus, you know, it's a lot harder to create real food than it is to, you know, sell us the GMOs and
exactly.
stuff that can stay on a shelf for 15 years as opposed to actual food. And it's just a better business model for them. But what does it do? It causes, well, it's a better business model not only for them, but like you said, the pharmaceutical companies that now come along and give you solutions to your, you know, the plaque in your veins and your diabetes and everything else that you got from eating food-like substances. So, yeah, absolutely. And that was the next thing I was going to ask you about is it's funny. You keep beating me to my questions, but I just want you to know.
Sorry, brother.
No, don't worry. This is great. You're exactly in the right kind of direction. I mean, I'm a little surprised. Are you going to come down toward the southeast of the U.S. at some point? Because if you do and you get into Georgia, I got to come see you.
Yeah, man, I'd love that. It'd be great.
You know, I, first of all, real music, your music is organic. This much I know. Just from the sample, it's not, I don't feel as though, I know you said something about trying to write a hit song, but I feel like you're writing it just, this is just my way, this is what's on my mind, and this is what I'm seeking to create. And again...
Yeah, you're exactly right, and I write it to say, you know, would the radio stations play this, or is this a hit today? I write it to, if I heard this on the radio, would I go, oh my gosh, dude, who is this guy? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to, sometimes I do DJ shows on my little stream here. They're unscheduled, unplanned, and they just go out there.
Awesome.
And I like to play artists who have something interesting to say. I mix all kinds of music together, though.
Yeah, that's great, man. That's real radio right there. I love it.
So I just want you to know that at some point, I'm going to be using some of your music on there.
Yes, please do, man. Whatever you can find, whatever you can illegally download, whatever, man. Have at it.
Not too many artists come on and say, yeah, go ahead, you'll get it however you get it.
Yep, no, I don't, you know, man, I've never been in this for money or fame or anything like that. My goal has always been to bring back real country music as I see it. And I know that there's a hungry, hell of a lot of hungry people out there that feel the same way I do about it. And you know what? They're coming out of the woodwork now because of a little song called I Will Not Comply. So, you know, God willing, they'll keep coming, man.
No, and it's great. It is rather simplistic and smooth.
It is.
And I'm not saying that in an insulting way at all.
No, I understand, brother.
It's the right thing. And I love the sentiment. I love your attitude. And actually, I advise people to go ahead and watch Blind Joe on YouTube, because just watching him, you get a sense of his attitude, at least for me. You get a sense of his attitude that's also carried out. Like, it just, this is not about an image. This isn't about I'm just trying to say something to be incendiary.
No.
It's very much him. I take it as, you know, absolutely genuine. So
yeah, I'm about as real as it gets, man, because I've never, you know, when I was younger, and I think we all wanted to be cool as a kid, you know, and I tried so hard to be cool and be like this awesome, you know, funny smart ass kid or really cool or whatever, and it just didn't never work for me. I always ended up trying too hard, and so finally, you know, when I got into my 20s, I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna be me, and if people don't like it, screw them. And it ended up working out for me.
Well, and you know what? I also appreciate the fact that you immediately use the term fear porn. It's one of my favorite terms.
Yeah, isn't that a great one? Yeah, I like that.
Because it is literally a world filled with it. I mean, back in the days when we were a little younger, Joe, there used to be these places, you know, before the internet, where they had pornography shops, you know, in certain places. And it's almost as if the internet and media in general has become a whole block of these things constantly.
Yeah, dude, it's crazy. When you can, you know, when your 9-year-old child can look at rape porn just by, like, accidentally typing something into a search engine, we've got a cultural problem. I mean, you know, that's just my opinion. I'm not one for censorship or anything like that, but, you know, I mean, I'll tell you this, you know, I Will Not Comply. I threw the official video up on YouTube a couple days ago, and after 48,000 views, YouTube was kind enough to remove it for medical misinformation. But Cardi B's WAP is still up with 486 million views. I don't know if you've seen that video, but you want to talk about porn?
Yeah, well, here we go. You know, there's not only that issue. Even if you can navigate your way through all the filters, right, and you think you protected your kids from excessive violence, from, you know, excessive sexuality they may not be prepared for, you know, you try and make things age appropriate, it doesn't work. You know why? Because there's other porn out there which is meant to condition people for, guess what, compliance.
And that's it. You know, it's the frog in the boiling water, or whatever metaphor you'd like to use. You know, it's slow burn. All this stuff is slow burn stuff. You know, even coming right down to the operating systems on our phones. You know, they keep updating and updating, and what they don't tell you is, you know, they want everything to be the Internet of Bodies. So now Bluetooth beacons are being activated on iPhones, and they're disguising that with, oh, AirTags. Look, now if your iPhone is within so many feet of someone else's iPhone, you know, then you can help each other find stuff. It's surveillance, people. Don't let them fool you with this crap. They don't care about you. They never have cared about us.
Now, the first company I saw to come out with that phrase, the Internet of Things, was Cisco.
Yeah.
And I was like, why is nobody taking this as a creepy idea that everything is now part of the virtual world? But then again, you know, Facebook is now Meta. So,
Meta.
You know.
Yeah, have you seen that crap? I was just going to ask you if you've seen Zuckerberg. What an NPC, huh? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, see, now that's
it's
a
creepy,
weird
dude.
Thing.
It's creepy. I mean,
yeah. No,
he wants us to live virtual lives. And I mean, you can go on YouTube and look up the metaverse. They've got a whole demo video that I just watched yesterday. And dude, it's like real live Matrix. I mean, seriously.
All right. So you'll appreciate this, you know, for you, the listener right now. I mean, look, the two blind guys can see this. Can you? Anyway.
Right. It's time to wake up, folks.
Really? You know, it's such a strange landscape. Look, personal question. You mentioned a wife, and you're talking about kids. Do you have kids?
We don't, actually. Our niece, Sophie, we basically raised her since she was born, and she is 7 now. But she is back with her mom since we're here in Nashville, and they're doing great. But we've always wanted a kid, man. We just haven't been blessed with one yet. And, you know, I'm not going to say that I'm glad, but definitely we definitely live day to day here in Nashville, you know, playing for tips and whatnot. So I'm kind of thankful that, you know, maybe this does take off and then maybe we'll be blessed with a child. And, some stability will come our way so that we'll be able to do right by our kid.
Oh, I got you. Look, one of the final, like, you know, I had to change vocation, so to speak, was becoming a father. And I said, well, it's either I figure out a way to adapt the kid into the situation or I got to change my situation. I understand. I was just curious because some people can pull that off. I didn't think I could. So I did try.
We did, especially with Sophie. You know, she would just come out with us on summer tours and stuff like that. And she's just such a good little traveler, man. We really lucked out with her.
Oh, I got you.
But yeah. So, and then like the nieces and nephews, they'll come out with us too when we tour our other nieces and nephews. We got a whole flock of them. So,
Well, I've got three. I've actually got a 7-year-old myself, and my oldest is 22. So,
nice.
You know, it's a different world when you're thinking about that. And a lot of single guys don't even consider that, you know, kids, I don't care. I don't have them, you know, even if they do have nieces and nephews. But it's an interesting thing because, you're not just concerned about the children, obviously. You're concerned about what it is you're seeing from, from your fellow walking upright creature, you know, that seems to speak the same language as you, but is constantly speaking in code. And they don't realize that they didn't write the code. But, I often wonder about this kind of thing. But you're focusing on the music in Nashville. You're recording. How did the exposure on The Voice go for you, basically? Because, you know, some people, I'm going to be brutally honest here. There's a bunch of people that got careers out of TV shows like that I don't know how they got careers. They're really a dime a dozen sort of individual. Like, again, Katie Caden, I mentioned her a couple of times because, and I want you to take a listen to her, just her vocals.
I will.
She was amazing. And I automatically would normally reject and did reject other people coming on my show that were tied to some of these shows.
I don't blame you because here's the thing with shows like The Voice and American Idol and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Those shows are designed to promote the judges, not to promote contestants. I mean, mm-hmm. it's basically an hour long commercial for Blake Shelton and Kelly Clarkson or whoever's on The Voice now. I have no idea.
Right.
But, it's easy to get wrapped up in a show like that and trick yourself, especially when you're on a show like that, trick mm-hmm. yourself into thinking that it's bigger than it is. And mm-hmm. because you're on this show, now you're really making something of yourself and you're going to be in the business and blah, blah, blah. Now that can happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are also contracts that go along with that are absolutely not in your favor.
Right.
And this is what the record industry in general relies on, is people that don't know the business and are fresh off the bus, so to speak, as we say here in Nashville. Mm-hmm. And they take them for everything they're worth most of the time.
Right. Well, and the thing is, look, again, I had limited exposure to the business, but I mean, at a certain point, I got taught a very hard lesson when all of a sudden I lost the right to my own name.
I believe it, dude.
And I wasn't even a good commodity. They were just, you know, making sure they covered all bases.
Shelving you. Just in case they had three other people that they needed to put out right now, and they're like, oh, no, we'll get to you, dude, we'll get to you. And meanwhile, you can't release any music, and you can't get out of your contract. They can drop you, though.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, finally that got done, thankfully. But was like, you know, but it was the whole thing. I couldn't use my own last name. I just was like, if you perform, you know, they literally have contracts written where if you try to perform something that is their property, and you can indeed become their property, you know, it's like, no, now you got to pay us to be able to use your own music, to use your own name, to, you know, and it's like, I think people fail to recognize that about this. It's not like, oh, just one day I woke up and now I'm a billionaire. You know, it doesn't work like that. These guys that were getting paid, you know, 7 cents a record, we've all heard that kind of stuff. And it's true because they used to have this point system and all that. I don't know how they work it out now, to be honest.
Well, here's the thing, Chuck, that it is too with, I think, why a lot of people don't understand the business is because we've been conditioned not to, you know, all these shows and all this radio stuff. And it's always, oh, go to Nashville or go to LA or go to New York and you'll get discovered and then you'll get famous because that's what happens. You know, just all you got to do is sign a record deal. That's the way it was, at least now we have the internet. So things are a little different, but I mean, that's the dream that has been shoved down our throats. So it's natural for people to think that that's the way it goes because that's what they tell you. That's why people go to New York and LA and Nashville and stuff like that, because they think that they're going to get a record deal. And after they get a record deal, their life is complete. And unfortunately, that is most of the time not the case.
Right.
Well, look, before I run out of time with you, because we're almost through the whole hour here, I didn't even tell people where they can get your music if they want to actually, you know, put something in there so that you're able to survive on a day-to-day. Maybe they can buy some, too.
Thank you for that, man. Yeah, it's all over at blindjoe.com. And then, I would tell you to go to YouTube, but they pulled the official video. So hopefully I'll have that back up in the next couple days, and then I'm sure they'll give me a nice strike on my channel. But whatever, man, we've got to fight somehow. So right now, blindjoe.com, and of course, like Instagram, Facebook, I'm all over there. And of course, I'm on TikTok as well. And you can link to all those social networks right from my website there. Plus, we've got I Will Not Comply and my single that I released at the beginning of the year here called Light of Her Love right up on the main page. We got the I Will Not Comply merchandise. So, yeah, everything's over at blindjoe.com, man. Come see me. Love for you to join the Rowdy Rebels community that we got going over there.
Right. Well, since we got a couple of minutes, I wanted to ask you about the I Will Not Comply merchandise because I only got a quick look over there. What are we talking about? We got T-shirts, right?
Yeah, we've got a couple of different T-shirts. We got the Call Your Own Shots T-shirt and then an I Will Not Comply T-shirt. And I think we have both of those in women's V-necks as well. And then we've got some coffee mugs and some stickers. I was looking into hats, but the quality of them wasn't great. And I want to let people know, too, that we are actually that you can link to that store on blindjoe.com, and that's actually set up through Teespring. Okay. Who are a distributor, but I'm working on getting physical merchandise, T-shirts that we'll put up on the website at blindjoe.com that will be in our web store, so you're not going through a third party. I've had a few people email me and just be like, hey, man, this is kind of not your normal setup. What's going on? And that's the case. It's just because they're a distributor, and I wanted to get the merchandise out as quickly as possible. So. Right. So don't let that alarm you. It's all on the up and up and everything.
Now, I had trouble with merchandise. I'll tell you what, I didn't used to have trouble with hats, and then I started having trouble with hats especially.
Those are really a hard thing to get, man. If you want really decent hats, you really kind of have to pay the $15 a piece and then, you know, hope you can make a profit.
Well, yeah, $15, and then you got to pay to ship it somewhere, and then by the time you're done, you know, you're charging $30 on a hat.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the problem. That's the problem.
And I know you don't want to do that to somebody, because you and I both know that we should be able to make this thing and sell it for way less than that.
Exactly.
And that's another thing, is that there is a business aspect to this, but this is a legitimate guy, and I don't just like him because, you know, he's blinder than I am, and therefore, you know, I got my superiority. I got a little bit of eyesight.
I love it.
It's not that. I'm just messing with you. You know that.
Dude, I love your humor, man.
You know, if I don't do it, somebody else will, and you know what? Why let them? I'll do it myself.
Yeah, right? They're never going to do it as good as you anyways, right?
Hey, I'll tell you another quick funny thing, because I'm curious, since we still got a couple of minutes left. And again, go to blindjoe.com, and that's just it, one word, blindjoe.com, right?
Yep, you got it, man.
So go to blindjoe.com and check out his stuff. Buy something from him if you can. It's very cool, and I feel like we need to support this guy, you know, much as we can. I mean, I'm broke too, but, you know, hey, look, if you can.
Hey, amen. Every dollar helps, you know.
We don't
expect big things, or I'm like I said, I'm not out to get rich and famous. I'm just out to pay the rent and make a little bit of a living with this music. And, you know, if you decide that you listen to it and you decide that you want to help us out, you know, on behalf of my wife, Leanne, God bless you for it. We appreciate it very much.
There you go. So mostly I see you sitting down from the videos that I've seen. And by the way, mm-hmm. I went to go try and see that video. I was going to ask you why it was removed, and you beat me to it. You told me.
Yeah, they pulled it. Medical misinformation, they said.
Yeah, of course.
So I appealed to them and said, well, this is, I don't understand that, because this is not an anti-anything video. This is a pro-freedom video, and certainly the fine folks at YouTube aren't against freedom, are you?
Yeah, well, keep trying that. You're gonna need to go to other video platforms, my friend. Because
we're over on Rumble right now, and I'll have it on BitChute by tomorrow too. So we're
awesome.
We're doing our thing, man. We've got 500,000 plus views on Facebook and 600,000 plus on TikTok. So it's happening, brother.
Gotcha. So look, with the last 2 minutes, I'll tell you something really quick, funny, and I just want to know what your experience is, because I see you sitting down a lot. Like I said,
yeah,
I used to have to move around on the stage, and quite frankly, once the stage lights would come on, I'm no longer in the dark blindness area without my glasses even on to help me at all. But I would be blinded in, like, white light and couldn't see anything. Now, I would move around on that stage. And even as a heavy metal performer, I would jump off the stage, go in the crowd. I was this kind of guy.
That's great, man.
But the funny thing is, I actually had a guy that helped us move equipment who would literally tell me exactly how the stage was set up, where things were taped down, and I used to call him my seeing eye roadie, because
that's funny. I call Leanne my seeing eye wife.
There you go. Perfect. See, this is the kind of thing you do.
Yeah, it is. It really is. But, yeah, and I totally feel you on that, dude. We, you know, usually I'm doing a lot of bar gigs and honky tonk stuff right now, and so those stages are pretty small. But when I have a big theater show, or we do like a casino or something, then I do that. We'll walk out and just kind of walk around the perimeter and check out the stage and just kind of get a feel for it. And usually I am sitting and singing and playing, but in case I just get a wild hair and decide I want to do something fun or funny or whatever, you know, then I know what I'm doing. So yeah, I totally get that.
You got to at least know where the cymbal stands are and stuff. I mean, because otherwise, you know, and don't worry, I backed into things and stepped on a guitar pedal.
Oh,
and,
yeah, dude.
You know, you're gonna.
There.
You're gonna. And tell you the truth, it's not just the guys who are visually impaired that do that. I mean, there's other
reasons.
Everybody
does it, yep.
Everybody does it, but of course it gets pointed out that's why you did it, because, you know. But, no, I was just curious about that, because, and tell you the truth, the way that you play sitting down, I'd stay sitting down, because it's really good. Again, it did remind me immediately of Jeff Healey, and not just because of the blind thing, but basically because I'm seeing, you know, not just the dobro on somebody's lap, but I'm listening to you play guitar, and I'm going, that's not a lap instrument. That's the way he's playing it.
And
I really appreciate it. So, again, blindjoe.com. Go there. Check him out. And hopefully the video will be back up on YouTube or whatever.
Like I said, if the appeal doesn't go through, I don't think they're going to. I think they're just ignoring me at this point. So I'll throw it back up tomorrow or Friday, and we'll go from there and see if I can't get a couple of strikes on my YouTube channel.
Well, but, you know, when you really get their attention, they start giving you strikes for no reason, too. I've had hate speech and everything else thrown at me.
Well,
I don't speak hatefully. I've never encouraged violence.
Hate speech.
I try not to even curse.
Can't even believe that's a damn thing, dude. Hate speech. I mean, what the hell are we living in 1984? I mean, my gosh.
Hate speech. You want a really
wrong
fun,
speak.
Really. You want a really fun thing. One time I got accused of cyberbullying Jeffrey Epstein. After he's dead, how do you cyberbully a dead man? Anyway, Blind
Thanks
Joe.
Thanks for having me on, brother. God bless you, dude. Thank you.
Absolutely. BlindJoe.com. Follow him on social media, and he'll see you somewhere. Maybe.
Yes, he will.
Anyway, I want to have another conversation with you in the near future.
My friend, God bless you. Stay strong, brother. I love you.
Absolutely. Love to you, Blind Joe, and love to you guys listening. Stick around. In the next hour, the Ocelli Effect will get a little deeper and, well, maybe less fun. Maybe not. Stick around and find out.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold,
silver,
the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Welcome to the second hour of the Ocelli Effect, and this is going to be an interesting hour. Now, I've got a guy I could talk to about a bunch of things, and we might have to touch on psychedelics at some point. Might have to touch on, well, the Grateful Dead at some point. We might have to touch on Kurt Cobain at some point, or at least the story about Kurt Cobain and what actually went down. I might share a little piece of personal history with this gentleman as we get into it. He's written some interesting things. I'll say that. And I know he's taken some flack from some other people. He's not going to get that here. And I asked him right before I went to air. I had a little bit of a technical glitch during the break, but excuse me, I still got the cold too. I had a little bit of a technical glitch during the break, but I asked him, you mind if I call you Hank? I mean, really, short conversation before we went live. So, anyway, sir, how are you tonight? How would I introduce you to the world if nobody knew who you were, and they're going to figure out exactly who you are in about 5 seconds? But how would you introduce yourself to the world if you're like a mystery guest somewhere?
One of the first psychedelic shrinks on the planet.
Hmm.
First manager of the Grateful Dead. Master's degree from the Warburg Institute in London. Master's degree from San Francisco State. General mistake maker.
Mistake maker? What? Well, that's... No, I hear you there, and you might be related to a famous person or two outside of being a road manager for the Grateful Dead. But
about that one.
Yeah, about that one. who might that be, sir?
Courtney Love, they say.
Courtney Love, they say. Oh. I might get a piece of information here I didn't know. So go ahead. I'm sorry. What would you say?
You're talking, bro.
No, I didn't want to talk over you. I thought you were going to throw something else in. You were doing great. So think about that. Highly educated individual. First, a psychedelic shrink that... And that's a weird term in and of itself, because psychedelics, to me, don't shrink. But... you know, they expand, but maybe that's just me.
Well, shrinking is expanding.
Ah, here we go. No, I love this. Look, it doesn't matter. Universally, space is irrelevant anyway.
So is God.
And so is God. I mean, no matter whose image you want to create him in. So this is...
I don't know. I don't know about the hen part.
Neither
do
I.
Could be a girl. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No problem at all. Because look, I want to get the biggest elephant out of the room first. So just in a couple of minutes, if Courtney Love is somebody who I've heard about a lot. Okay, why? Because I was a musician, and I knew musicians on the other coast. I was on the East Coast. And the first time I heard of her, she was, in a movie and she, you know, Sid and Nancy, go ahead.
That's fine. Sid and Nancy, I got it.
Well, the next time I heard about her is, from my friends who are on the West Coast, who were telling me about this menace of sorts that was out there driving them crazy. And I paid no mind to it, okay, because it was just, you know, look, guys who communicate about me, you know, in the world of music, especially like hard rock and punk and metal and stuff like this, at that time, a lot of things were legendary. A lot of things were, you know, more fiction than fact when it came to stories being told and stuff like this.
Exactly.
So I never paid much mind. And then, interestingly, I was supposed to be interested in this Courtney Love character because suddenly she was actually a rock star. And why? Because she was married to a rock star. And again, I was not the guy who was impressed by this kind of thing. But it was one of these things. And then the next thing I know, quite honestly, is a couple of years after a guy named Kurt Cobain does make it big with his band. And becomes a worldwide sensation, he's dead and gone. And I thought, well, you know, this kind of thing happens. And then ever after, there have been stories larger than life, and there have been stories that make a lot of sense to me, and there have been documentaries, and there have been people who have come out from, you know, Sub Pop Records, and, you know, people that claim to have been friends of friends, and a lot of stuff. But you might have a unique perspective on this that is not necessarily getting heard everywhere.
What? I mean, my heart gets torn out?
Yeah, that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't mind.
Well, I'm just asking, you know, how would you tell this story to somebody who says, well, what would, you know, Courtney's father know about this? I mean,
wow.
Just...
My, you know, yeah, nothing much directly. I never directly met him because Courtney made sure I never did.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to. I had a fantasy that they were going to pull up in the driveway with the baby in a big limo, and we were all going to go out to dinner, and then we were going to plan when I get invited to the wedding. Or the christening, or whatever, you know, whatever it was. None of that ever happened.
Mm.
And none of that ever happened for Kurt's family, really, either, for the majority of people in Kurt's family. Courtney wanted to make sure that we didn't know anything about it, because she had this nefarious plan.
Mm.
Which we, you know, so we knew about it, but we didn't think much of it at first. She used to live with us in 83 in Menlo Park. And the reason she moved to Menlo Park, Silicon Valley, was because all of her hooker friends were balling, and, you know, rich money engineers from the companies, stuff like that. So, you know, we had a nice house. I worked for Honeywell. I worked for Lockheed. I worked for Applied Materials. I worked for Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And I became editor, senior editor of a magazine called Dr. Dobbs Computer Journals,
okay,
which was an alternative programming software journal, still exists. And so we moved down there to Menlo Park, and we had a nice 100-year-old house. It was a great place, and Victorian, and Courtney didn't have any place to live. She was broke, so she moved in with us.
Okay.
With Cat Jellin. Cat Jellin was from Babes in Toyland. You know, you heard of them?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm just letting you tell this story because this is, a lot of people wouldn't think that was the case because, again, the legend is that she was always around rock stars and always around, you know, very, very famous people. And at that time, you know, not everybody in the tech world was necessarily well known.
Well, there's Steve Jobs used to hang out.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm saying there are some superstars.
At my house.
But, yeah, okay. So, wow.
Okay.
I didn't know that.
And,
okay.
Nobody does. And Dan Kottke, who invented one of the computer keyboards for the original Macintosh, and so forth. And you know, every once in a while we'd run into the Neanderthal guy who invented the Apple E. What's his name? What's that guy's name?
What, Wozniak?
Yeah, that guy. The guy that looks like a Neanderthal.
Okay.
No, we love him. We love him. We're kidding. And, I hung out with all those people.
Right.
I was editor of the magazine that was one of the key alternative magazines, see?
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know if Courtney even knows that to this day. But anyway. So she needed a place to stay because she was broke, and it was close enough to San Francisco. She wanted to go to the Mabway Gardens all the time, and she wanted to go up to a place called the Vats.
Mm-hmm.
And chime in if you heard of that. And the Vats, and get stoned on a thing called China White, which turned out to be fentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to bring her down off a couple of bad acid trips. So she would stay with us. We gave her a room upstairs in our attic, and she would bring her friends by. And all of her friends were, like, very already famous, mostly, like L7. Who's the woman that was the founder of L7? And
well, at the time, it was remarkable because L7 was an all-female band, and there weren't that many of those around in that genre.
Right. Well, and they were busy digging up money on the side. I won't say how.
Mm-hmm.
And they got into my wallet. They got into my. They scammed me a little bit. And I learned my lesson about that. But I was chauffeuring them around. Dad would drive them up to these obscure nightclubs in the city. And then they would not come home. And so I would go home. And then the next day or two, they'd show up at the house.
Mm-hmm.
And steal all my books. And stuff like that. One of the things that
stealing books. Now that seems odd to me. They were stealing books, but then again, you being an educated man, you probably had some fairly expensive texts in your house.
Guess what? Okay, let me tell you a little story. So she goes into my library and she steals a bunch of books. One of the books she steals is a 2-volume set of Torquato Tasso poetry. Gerusalemme Liberati. It's worth about $1,000. It was in immaculate condition. It was given to me as a gift. And she stole one volume. So she took the one. She didn't even know there was 2 volumes. She went down to the bookstore. How I found out about it was the bookstore guy. I had my stamp inside. And the guy from the bookstore calls me and says, "Do you have the other volume?"
The guy she sold it to was checking with you to see if he can complete the set.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. I didn't even know she had it. I didn't. I said, "No, I don't know." I said, "Well, we got it up here. Do you want to sell it?" I said, "Wait a minute. I'll be up in a half an hour." And I drove up and got the other one back.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to pay the guy what he paid her for volume one, which was about $25. So that kind of stuff went on constantly with them, all of them.
Mm.
And, I had to get a new dictaphone. And then she was mad because it was reel-to-reel. And all that kind of stuff. She used to go around the house and say, "Why aren't there more Granny Smith apples?" And all the while, I'm going, okay, I'll go down to the store and get you some more apples. So eventually she started loosening up a little bit and hanging out. And she would say, you know, I'm going to kill myself a rock star someday. And I says, what are you talking about? That's ridiculous. No, I am. I think I'll just kill myself a rock star and then make my way that way because it's too hard to make it in the business.
Wow.
And I said, and then she, you know, and she said, here, and she handed me a piece of paper. And on it was written a poem, which she's written a couple times since, called Future Date. And it was about, I'm going to make my way. I'm going to do my great. I'm going to make my way on a future date. I'm going to meet someone who's great. You know, that kind of stuff. And he's going to make my way. He's going to help me every day. That kind of stuff. You know, it was kind of childish poetry, but it was really scary. You know, it was so scary, I didn't believe it. Well, it turned out it was pretty prophetic. Hmm. She used to go around the house, like, saying that. So, you know, when Kurt died and it was announced on the radio, my wife called me from her work and said, hey, Hank, guess what? She did it. I said, did what? She said, future date. Said, what? Yeah, she did it. Tune in the radio. So I tuned in the local rock station. Sure enough, there's Kurt laying on his ass. So we both got, both my wife and myself, got pretty traumatized because we figured we weren't ever going to see Courtney again, which turned out to be almost true. But we also realized she did it. We didn't have any evidence that she did it. Right? You know, we didn't have any, there wasn't any evidence. Right. It's just on a joke. They found Cobain laying out in the shotgun. And I said, no, that shotgun ain't right. He didn't shoot himself. And I knew that much right then, because that wasn't the MO, especially of the future date. Right. So anyway, she mentions a shotgun killing her mother or her school teacher, one of her school teachers, in another poem, though. We have that, too. And she left all that stuff behind at the house, including a lot of her stage-worn clothes, guitars, that kind of stuff. Not, you know, beat up stuff. But right. Anyway, and I was pretty traumatized at that point, you know, because at that, I had heard of Kurt, knew who he was, and I knew he was popular. But as soon as his death was announced, the mysterious death was announced, people started freaking out, as you remember. Sort of like the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
And I'm really freaking out. Lots and lots and lots of phone calls, lots and lots and lots of radio interviews for me.
Right.
You know, right away. And it was in the paper all over, all the papers, all the television. So I go, this is going to be, you know. This is not an aha moment. This is an uh-oh moment, right? And I actually started feeling remorse and guilty and uh-oh. So a couple of days, about 3 or 4 days went by, and I got really depressed. I had never been depressed before like that. Hmm. You know, I'm a shrink. I've been trying not to be depressed, right?
Right.
So I went to see a buddy of mine's wife, who was a crisis counselor, grief counselor, Sutherland, Debbie Sutherland. And she pulled me through for about a week. Saw her every day for about a week. And she got me through. And I did what she, there's little, when you're in grief like that, there's little, self tricks you can pull to help yourself through.
Right.
I won't go into now, but everybody knows what they are, you know. And they, you know, cried my pillow for about a week.
Right.
Started to feel a little better. It took about a month to get out of that.
Well, and, you know, I hate to even interrupt you, but I want to ask you a question here because there's a gap, right? Between she's writing these poems, she hadn't met Kurt at the time she's writing these poems because it's years before anybody would have met Kurt because he was just some guy in Seattle, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and here's two questions, and I you know, excuse me if they're rude, but, you know, did you have any inkling that there was, you know, she was just waiting for a target to show up for this? Or
absolutely. And, no, absolutely.
Okay, and was there any candidate in between then that you thought maybe, oh, she's trying to get close to? Yeah. Because, see, yeah. I heard lots of stories in the late 80s about her trying to get close to, like, everybody.
Roz Resebeck.
Mm-hmm.
A guy named from Nation of Sheep.
Right.
Out of Portland. Roz Resebeck. He's lucky he's alive. Because he dumped her. And she loved him. She thought she was going to marry him and all this stuff, crap. And she was ACDC anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't understand that at all. But one day I found a bunch of letters to and from Roz in her room that she had left behind. Still have them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she said she was going to burn his house down. She was going to come up there and kill him. And that was Resebeck. So, you know, it's connected. Trust me.
Well, in the late 80s, see, here's the funny thing. In the late 80s, before the whole Seattle scene kind of exploded, and, you know, just for the record, again, it's not like you weren't exposed to the world of artistry when it came to musicians. I mean, you know, if you're going on tour with the Dead, you know,
right.
you're not.
Yeah.
It's not like you're virginal about this stuff, okay? So even back then, the fact is, I had heard the stories of because I knew about like the Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, you know, that whole burst that came out of Seattle that you know shook up the corporate music world. Well, you know, she was trying to insert herself with a whole bunch of those guys. It seemed like all that whole scene at one point. I heard stories from guys whose names you wouldn't even know because they were just, you know, hangers-on that were hanging out.
Lemonheads.
Well, you know, the guys that were, like, there were bands before Pearl Jam was formed, right? There were bands before Soundgarden was formed. And some of the guys who were, you know, cast-offs from those bands, they knew who Courtney was. She was around and in that mix. Almost like looking for who was going to be up and coming. This is what I had heard about, and this is before Kurt's death, that she was just... Go ahead.
Have you heard of a form of media called, you know, what do you call them? The little booklets or the little communications before email?
Oh, yeah.
They would...
There were fanzines. There were
That's it.
Yeah, of course. But that's the world I was living in as a local musician on the East Coast. You understand? And we were communicating back and forth with the West Coast. That's why I'm telling you, I was hearing these stories about her before anybody knew who she was, except she had been in that one movie. You know, that was it.
She was getting all the fanzines at our address.
Right.
Because she didn't have a reliable address anywhere else because her mother wouldn't tolerate that crap.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd rather come and see me, but as a compliment, I guess. She'd rather come and see me or have me bring her fanzines to back read the next time I drove her or, you know, went to see her in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Because Frankie went to Hollywood was at Bobaway. Or... You know, somebody like that. All those, you know, Frankie.
Yeah, Frankie goes to Hollywood. The Relax. Yeah. They had a hit with Relax, yeah.
Yeah, all that stuff. She was always a groupie, always on scene, always there. And she always got me or somebody to drive her to the Mobley Gardens or to whichever one of the pubs they were at. The Vats. I never drove her to the Vats because I didn't want her to go there. I told her not to go there. I thought it was a bad place. You ever heard of the Vats?
Yeah, I've heard of it. And this is the weird thing to me is that, okay, you know, the Grateful Dead are legendary at this point because of the tours and the people that would go around with them and all that kind of stuff. I mean, they used to allow you to bootleg their stuff. You could record their concerts, you know, if you went to the right spot and did the right thing.
It.
No, you weren't supposed to sell it, but you were allowed to record it. I mean, it was a whole unusual sort of almost organic traveling circus that I don't know who thought of it, but it was an incredible...
Spontaneous.
Well, then it was just an organic happening, right? But either way, it became a subculture in and of itself. A lot of you youngins might not remember there were people called Deadheads. They used to just travel around, mm-hmm. with the band. So
it came out of Kesey's group, you know, all kinds of different groups.
Oh, yeah.
Garcia's wife, you know, just a whole bunch of people, man.
Oh,
various,
yeah. But
and Monterey Pop started a lot of it.
Oh yeah, but see, this is back in the days of big festivals and all this. So again, what I'm saying is, why is it that? I mean, do you think that any of that? I mean, did you expose this kind of stuff to her early on, and she said, "Okay, I'm going to take this and." No?
Not me. No, I tried very, very hard to keep her away from that. She did get a glimpse of it from her mother, who was, by the way, remarried four times.
Mm-hmm.
And all of her remarried husbands, all of her husbands, were guys that were happy to go to all these gigs because, Haight-Ashbury and... stuff. No, I made it a point to not take her to any of those things because I was, for one thing, they never wouldn't let me see her very much. So any time I had with her, I was going to spend in some kind of either educational or environmental relationship.
Mm.
Yeah. Going to see my mom or driving my Mercedes or doing something that. Horseback riding, fishing, that kind of stuff.
Right. Was there a certain point at which, though, she kind of, again, not trying to be rude, but it's like at a certain point, she just becomes like this toxic hippie of sorts. And again, I want to get away from this discussion in a minute, but I find it remarkable that there's this lead-in and almost like she had a plan. And I wonder if there were other plans you saw besides this that were, written in this simple poetry that maybe you saw revealed elsewhere. And also, I mean, you have a grandchild here, which I've seen
who
her
has absolutely no side effects. But by the way, I took a polygraph.
Mm-hmm.
And I have it, and it's on display online. And anybody that wants to see it, I have copies. I'll send it to them. So I did not give her LSD, and I did not expose her to LSD or any other kind of psychedelic, period.
Okay.
And I can prove it. So that let's put that aside first before I answer the question.
Okay. I like that, but I also like the name of the publishing company there, and want to tell people about where they can go to take to go buy your writing.
Well, first of all, it's on the following line. You can always write to it and get a catalog, and also get whatever else you need. It's called Love Kills book at gmail.com.
Okay, all one word, lovekillsbook at gmail.com, right?
Yeah, that's it.
There you go.
And the rest is Amazon.
Right. There was a Facebook page. Is that still active? Or
No, I took it away because it was being abused by people. A lot of people just didn't like it. And it was also a lot of people from there was a guy in France that was mad at Tom Grant and anybody that, you know, a guy that didn't want Kurt Cobain to be a suicidal guy. So he made everybody related to it miserable. I think he was working for Courtney. And that's modern times. I'm all more comfortable in the past talking to you.
No, look, fair enough. But I just wanted to point out, okay, if you email that address, you can get a hold of it. But Love Kills is the name of the book, though, right?
Right, Love Kills. And the email is Love Kills Book. To order it, it's a... and then we'll send you an invoice, mm-hmm. and you can just pay it by credit card anywhere in the world. lovekillsbook@gmail.com.
Mm. Do you take PayPal that way?
That is a PayPal thing.
Okay. No, just making sure. Okay, so you can actually use that as the way to buy the book via PayPal.
We'll invoice you, or you can just, we'll invoice you. But let me just make a comment. I have some feelings about that because I just found out that Betsy DeVos's brother is a PayPal board of directors guy.
Oh, yeah.
But no more. But no more about that. And it's just the way it goes.
Now, listen, if you're going to transact with any money on the planet, or it seems like you can't avoid an evil corporation at this point. It is.
Great. I'm sorry about some of it, but yeah.
Yeah, no worries. Listen, I understand. I hold my nose and take PayPal as well. But it's just because it's
Eric the Black Prince.
Mm-hmm. So anyway. You know, one thing I want to make clear, because we got disconnected, but when I said that you exposed her to stuff, I didn't mean that you had exposed her to psychedelics. Now, maybe somebody else said that. I meant the culture of, you know, say the...
Oh, yeah. But also, I took her to school with me all the time.
Yeah.
San Francisco State. She always ran around campus, and everybody loved her and picked her up and carried her on her shoulders and stuff. And when we went to Europe... You know, I missed her a lot, and there was lots of interactions where I took her over to see friends of mine who are very, very famous people in the band, you know, at their homes. So she spent a lot of time with all the different band members in their houses and talking to their wives and Mountain Girl and Garcia and Tom Constanton. And Phil Esch and so forth, knew her. And, you know, Garcia was a babysitter for her for a while when we were still married. And his old Corvair was out in front, old Rusty, and, you know, parked out in front. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of funny. I never thought anything would happen bad. There's a bunch of people like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she was exposed. Mm-hmm. She was exposed to the dead culture and also to the so-called quote-unquote hippie culture. I was bringing people down off of bad acid trips.
Mm-hmm.
See, and so I had to often go out and leave her with my girlfriend, who was her name was Jerry Ganter, and she was a wonderful person, and I never had any worries about that. And Linda, my wife, approved of leaving her with Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
So they were friends, so that wasn't a bad deal. And, you know, some of Linda's husbands later on had some problems, especially when they went to Australia without telling me, and they took her to Australia with them.
Yikes.
And there was, you know, that was a whole different thing, though. You know, I have no idea really what happened to them down there. So if you're worried about her being exposed, there's more than one culture, subculture to be exposed to.
No, absolutely. I was just making the, I was just asking the question. I wasn't even, you know, accusing. I know that other people have had.
No, I know you weren't.
You know, other people have had nasty things to say.
Yeah.
You know.
I anticipate it because I hear so much.
Oh, yeah. Like,
I hear it so.
Believe me, I wouldn't even mention the silliness of the MK Ultra thing. You know, which other people have mentioned. I wasn't even going to bring it up. And I know about the legitimate MK Ultra stuff, you know, which is why I would never think that there'd be anything to do with Courtney here. I'm sorry. It's just, it makes no sense.
MK Ultra is pretty future thinking, but I don't think they got that big a crystal ball.
Well, no, and look, there's something to be said about the legitimate things that were unearthed, you know, through congressional investigations and the legitimate program that was out there. But this isn't connected to her. I always found that silly when discussing this, so I wasn't going to bring it up. That's for sure. I was just curious about, you know, how it is she goes from sort of knocking around among, you know, the scenes, so to speak, and various scenes, it seemed. You know, they're on the West Coast, and I mean, was there a point at which you knew she had kind of gravitated toward Kurt? And the other question is, you know, and I hope this isn't a sore topic, but you have a grandchild now, right?
Yeah.
You know, and she's interesting. I mean, you know, from afar, I see her online now. You know, I remember when she was a baby, obviously. I mean, I was a young adult when she was born.
Yeah.
And all that. And, of course, somebody's going to want to go check and see what happened to, I think they named her Frances Bean. You know.
Yeah.
You know, curiosity, sure. So, I mean, I'm curious if you ever had any contact with your granddaughter.
Never met her.
Never met her. Okay.
No, but. She looks exactly like one of my cousins back in Pittsburgh.
Ah, okay.
Exactly. Not just sort of like, absolutely identical.
Definite family resemblance that you know about. Okay.
Oh, yeah. The genetics. That was enough for me. The minute I saw her face, okay, that was enough for me. I didn't have to meet her.
I got you.
I mean, if you want immortality, you look at your child's face and you say, ah, there it is. No more Neanderthal there, you know.
There you go. That's what it'll be in the future, and or something like it.
Something like that. And we don't know how far in the future, but I'll tell you an interesting, kind of a salacious story that I'm sure your listeners are going to be turned up.
Okay.
For the last year, I've had this chick chasing me and showing me dirty pictures online and stuff. Man, wanting to get with me. And I'm married, man. And she knew it. And I told my wife, I said, hey, this chick chasing me down, man. I don't know what. Well, we just ignored her. And she got really mad at me after a while for not responding to her. And finally figured out what she was trying to do. She wanted me to donate sperm so she could have a Courtney Love child.
And I'm sorry, I find that funny.
Laugh your ass off, bro. It's absolutely true. I'm that famous now. But not for me, not for my books, for whatever I got, you know. In the stuff.
Right, I got you.
In my bloodstream. I'm going, what? Because somebody called me up and said, oh, that chick's notorious for calling people and trying to get them to sleep with her so she can have a baby. Well, what does she want a baby for? She said, oh, she can sell a baby.
Yikes.
You mean she's going to have the baby and then sell it? Oh, yeah. You mean there's people out there that'll... If you can prove that you're related to John Lennon, you can get a couple million dollars for your baby.
Yikes.
Oh, yeah, it's a yiker. And I'm going, how many people do you think are doing that? She says, oh, lots of people. She, the woman told me about it was a nurse. A rocker, but a nurse. And I said, oh, okay. I checked on it, and this agency, that one of them is in London. But there's also one in New Jersey somewhere, and I think that's the one we're talking about. So anyway, my son thought that was, I said, listen, hey, I have, by the way, since then, I found my lost son, Peter, and he's fabulous. And he has four children. So I have five grandchildren.
Ah, okay. I wasn't aware that you had, I wasn't aware that, that was the case with you. So.
No, it is. No. Don't feel sorry for me, man. I'm immortal. Don't feel sorry for me, man. I'm immortal.
Cool. That is a thing of beauty right there, especially if you can take that attitude about it.
But, you know, the planet's going to freeze over, and we're all going to be in the same iceberg, so I'm not worrying too much about it.
Look, eventually it's all going to go away anyway. You know, but...
Yeah.
But what an interesting life you've led, though. I mean, I do want to touch on the psychedelics a bit, because... you know, just recently, right? Now, I tried the synthetic stuff for recreational purposes when I was younger, right? And quite frankly, I didn't have a good experience. And I have suffered since I was a kid with PTSD. I mean, legit. Not like, you know, this over-diagnosed nonsense. I mean, like, I had legitimate reasons for it. And you know, I get into my late 40s, and I'm starting to really have a lot of problems. You know, 40 years of living with this. And I tried, you know, the pharmaceutical approach. I tried the therapy approaches. I've tried it all. And quite frankly, happening along mushrooms saved my life, you know.
Psilocybin.
Yeah, psilocybin, exactly. Saved my life. It really did. I was.
I heard that.
You know, really feeling as though I was. I'll just speak frankly to you. In short, I felt like I was dying inside from this. You know, this constant state that I was in from the PTSD, you know, it was like literally I felt myself shutting down. And I tried it. You know what they call a hero dose. You know, to just, I know it's not approved by most people, at this point in time, although they are starting to do some studies in it again. And I gotta tell you, it absolutely is the only thing that ever alleviated, this sinking horrible thing that I was going through. I didn't have the same experience with the synthetic stuff, okay? But this is not, first of all, it's not a drug. I'm sick and tired of people calling it that because it's not a drug. It is something else, and I'll tell you with all humility, I don't even know what to call it. But it repaired some damage that was within me, one way or another.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
that happens a lot. Oh, yeah. I bring people down off of bad acid trips and stuff, and it will often be bad peyote trips or bad mushroom trips.
Right.
Or bad DMT trips they had. Owsley was pumping out tons of crap. He used to actually say to people as a joke at parties, well, I haven't made it to my metric ton yet. Mm. You know, he wanted to actually sell or give away a metric ton of acid. I mean, that was his goal. Mm. Everybody thought that was cute. A metric ton, that was his thing.
Yikes.
Yeah, I knew Owsley. You know, he was out there punching it out. Anyway, there's a lot of stuff we can talk about, man, aside from this Cobain thing, because, you know, I'm sure Cobain took acid, but he was more of a backwoods rocker. And I had a buddy up in Canada that was a guitar teacher, And Cobain took lessons from him.
Okay.
And so I called the guy when I heard that Courtney was dating him. I thought they were going to pull up in front of my house in the limo, and we were all going to go out to dinner.
Right.
So I called this guy. I won't say his name because he's well-known, and his dad has half interest in a newspaper. And he lives out in Eagle Harbor in British Columbia.
Okay.
And I called him, and I says, listen, did you really give Kurt lessons? He says, yeah, he's one of the most talented people I've ever taught, and he's gifted as hell. And that was before, just after Courtney met him.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, do you think he's going to make it? And he says, oh, yeah, he'll be big. He'll be really big. He'll be big as Lennon. Not quite as big as, you know, he'll be big.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, thanks. So I realized she had had herself a whale on a hook,
mm-hmm.
you know, before she married him. And whenever my wife called me and said, well, she finally did it, we knew what was going on. So, you know, that's sort of part of that story.
No, I got you.
When I went down to see her, I went down to see her at a club in San Francisco when her band Hole was in town.
Mm.
And she was hanging out with a guy from Lemonheads
mm-hmm.
who was gigging with her. I forget the guy's name. Really nice guy, really good-looking kid. But anyway, it was the Lemonheads guy.
Right.
And here is the funny thing. You know, I got a couple of books out on the Grateful Dead before. So the next morning, I go to pick him up at the hotel, and he runs out to the car and shakes my hand and says, I read your book, man. I read your book.
Hmm.
So, and she grabbed him. And she just about kicked his ass.
Okay.
For saying hello to me.
For saying hello.
Well, yeah, because she had her eyes on him, too. Because a week after that, she was smooching up to his mother. That was her plan. What she did was she would get to the parents and smooch with the parents and the mother. And then she'd have a baby. That was the other part of the plan, so forth. It was all planned out.
Hmm. Well, look, since we're talking
about... Read my book. I mean, please have people read the book, because part of it, most of it's in there.
No, I got you. I was looking to turn subjects, but you know what? Wherever you want to go with this, I gotta tell you, you got probably a million fascinating stories. And obviously, there's... You know, not just about this topic. I kind of lingered on the topic of Courtney a little long, and you know, I apologize, but it's just
no.
you're telling me such fascinating stuff. Now, a big key question here again.
How about a part two? How about another interview someday?
Absolutely. I gotta be more organized with you. You got 100 things to tell me. I thought you only had maybe 10. So
I can give you secrets from Lockheed.
Yeah, right. This is what I'm saying. There's so many different directions I could go in with you. I didn't realize, quite frankly.
I went to call on the lunch break one day, and I turned a knob. The same thing. He had the same passcode. Turned the knob, and there was the Blackhawk dripping kerosene, just sitting there with no guard. And I got to stand there looking at the thing. You don't know what the Black Hawk looks like when you're there by yourself.
Mm.
You know what I'm talking about, Black Hawk?
No, actually, I don't. I actually don't. You mean the plane? The
10,000 miles an hour.
Yeah. Okay. No, I've heard of this, but I don't know anything about it, to be honest with you.
I saw it. I punched the tires.
Nice. Nice. So, you know, like I was saying, there's an interesting world here. You know, you on your own, and then your daughter goes through an interesting world for sure. I'm really kind of shocked at some of the stuff you've said that I didn't know about. There is a weird period of time. See, what a lot of people focus on with this is, you know, they start talking about the heroin. And, you know, and I say, look, it's very easy for somebody. Let's be honest about substances here for a minute. It's very easy to fall in love with an opiate. I mean, the whole rest of the country has figured that out now, right?
All of China did it.
Oh, of course they did. But, you know, that's what I'm saying. Is that there is a huge history to opium in general. But this is usually one of the things they focus on when they talk about the story between him and her, right? Is how that happened. Because even the people that have done documentaries where they talk about she was hiring detectives to go find him and all this stuff, right?
Nah.
Well,
she did. She knew where he was from day one. Courtney's a control freak.
Mm.
She, you know, and the minute that story came out about her hiring Tom Grant to find him and he was missing,
right.
I'm going, no, she knew where he was. She knew within 10 inches of where she was at all times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she even knew what cab driver came and got him. In fact, I heard recently there was another plan to kill him at another location.
Mm. Well,
in L.A.
Well, some people...
And he was supposed to...
Yeah, some people make a point about what happened in Europe just before this, in Italy, right? And you know what?
Yeah.
What did you know about that at the time? Did you know anything about that, or I mean, were you just?
I thought it was really suspicious because, mm-hmm. you know, and Rohypnol won't kill you anyway, so I don't understand what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
I think they were trying to get the body. Get the body to sleep so they could shoot him up with something.
Mm.
And that was the MO, but they did it wrong. Did it wrong two or three times, actually, you know? Plus that, I got to tell you, she's killed a bunch of people or had people killed or caused people to be killed by accident. And there's several of those. That's for another interview. I don't mind saying what I know about that stuff.
Okay. Well, again, I don't know, you know, how deep you want to go into it. I'm just...
Well, she's a psychopathic narcissist, egomaniac. And there's no... I didn't do it, so I'm not sad about it. I'm sad about it, but I'm not, you know, guilty about it, because I didn't make it happen. But my dad had a little bit of twinge of that, too. And he was at Camp Landing, Florida. Give me some idea of how weird my dad was, and whether or not you think it's genetic or not. He was at Camp Landing, Florida, going to ship out to Europe.
Okay.
And he was in the Army, and the Marine Corps instructor came over and said, "We're going to ship you guys out." And my dad stood up and said, "Are we going to kill Germans?" And he said, yes. So my dad, the next day, went into a infiltration course, blew his shoulder out so he wouldn't have to go kill white people.
Hmm.
To give you some idea of what kind of a racist bastard my father was. So, yeah, you know, he was pretty screwed up. It ran in the family. I'm not saying I did it, but... No, I inherited it, probably.
Hmm. Well, I mean, do you think it contributed to a sort of a predisposition for unconventional thinking? Because, I mean...
Absolutely. Well, there's others, too, because my uncle, on my mother's side, invented the talking baby doll.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
I did not know that. You know what? There's probably a million things that I would have to learn about Hank Harrison to really have this conversation in full.
Not only that, I have a photographic memory.
Okay.
And it was weird. And everybody thought, oh, look at this poor bastard. He's retarded. So my IQ is only 127 or something, 125, something, you know, in that range.
Mm.
but my photographic memory makes it look like it's really much higher, and it really isn't. You know, there's lots of stuff I don't get. Walking down the street, seeing people do stuff, I just, you know, the whole thing with Trump, I'm going, what the fuck?
Hey, listen, that's what I was doing the whole time with that. I couldn't understand it. You know, there's a guy I actually met once.
You know the old deal where you put your finger on your lips and go, blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
That's what I'm just saying. Couldn't get it.
No, I totally,
no way, man.
Totally understand.
Look, not after Obama. After Obama was on there, I loved Obama.
Ah, okay. Well, I didn't even know you were political, honestly. So,
well, if you were in the Grateful Dead, if you were with the Grateful Dead, you were.
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
Joan Baez sat next to me. Joan Baez, you know, everybody was political in those days. And you get somewhat politicized a little bit.
Right.
I studied with a guy named Saul Alinsky, who I knew personally. And I was with the party at Asilomar in Monterey when Saul died.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't go to his funeral, but I saw him, his dead body laying on the sidewalk. You know, so, you know, Alinsky taught me a lot, and he taught Obama a lot, too. So we're in the same framework, you know, organizing, things like that.
Gotcha. Okay,
but,
well.
I turned out to be a pretty good shrink for a while there, too.
Well, there's a whole other thing because, you know, that world has definitely changed since you went to school for it, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, look, I am not all for the pharmaceutical industry as it stands, you know, and really feel as though, quite frankly, people that you might consider to be colleagues of sorts have preyed upon people at the behest of the pharmaceutical interests. You know, with a lot of toxic things that, you know, here's your antidepressant medicine. Don't worry, it might make you suicidal. You know, and things like this.
Zoloft.
Right. You know, and things like this. I mean, we could get into a lot of different conversations. I don't want to try and keep you all night, though, because, you
know. I'm here. My wife hates me. She's gone. She wants to make dinner.
You know what I love about you is just the freedom you have to just, you blurt stuff out. And I don't even know what's coming. This is so great. Have you ever heard of a guy named Richard Allen Miller?
No.
Okay.
I heard of Baba Ram Das, otherwise known as Dick Albert.
Okay, no problem. But no, Richard.
I wanted to get this across to you, though. Dick Albert's mother was a Hershey.
Hmm. Interesting.
Hershey,
now,
PA.
Yeah, I got you. Hershey, like the chocolate. Hershey, PA. I got you.
Yeah. She was on that side. I thought I'd throw that out there. He told me that.
Really?
Yeah.
That is
a picture with him. No, I have pictures of me and him together.
No kidding. All right. Well, you know, Saul Alinsky is a shocker enough for me because that's a name that nobody seemed to even know until like 2 years ago. You know,
yeah.
It's an odd thing. Again, I was born in the 70s. So, you know.
I'm surprised you heard of him.
Yeah, well, I read too much.
I'm happy. It's a bonding thing. It's a bonding thing, Dave.
Well, anyway, guys, I'm going to end the show. I don't even know what to make of most of what just happened. How about that? You know, but Hank Harrison, again, Love Kills is the name of the book about, and I was going to talk to him about Courtney Love mostly. And, you know, because that's his daughter. he is a fascinating guy. I'm going to give you guys links along with the podcast when we put this out, so that you can follow up on the story, what Hank really thinks happened. I find it fascinating. She had a poem And what he describes as a plan ahead of time, again, sorry, I'm still sick. But this is amazing stuff. Hank has given me one of the most fascinating conversations I've had in quite a while. So hopefully you guys appreciated it. Hopefully you appreciated the first hour guest, Blind Joe. I urge you to check out blindjoe.com. And again, for Hank Harrison's book, here, let me pause the closing music. For Hank Harrison's book, write to lovekillsbook@gmail.com, and he'll send you an invoice, and you can get a copy of it. So that's the way that is, and that's the end of a Wednesday night on the Ocelli Effect. Made extra strange by my producer, Nature Boy. And we're going to have Hank Harrison back. I'm going to try and be more prepared to handle the scatter shot of that guy. I think it's a different level of genius, folks. Anyways, talk to you tomorrow night. I have no idea what's going on, but hopefully you'll be there, because I will, because after all, I am merely Ocelli. All of you are a DV fan.